Welcome to Omschooling for Spirituality. The Flow is a delightful mix of insight, divine inspiration, and humor, where wisdom meets earthiness to help your ongoing spiritual growth and transformation. Follow the flow of enlightenment and explore everything spiritual through the deepest self-inquiry as student Lisa Berry asks master spiritual teacher G.P. Walsh the kinds of questions you would ask an elder, a wise man, or a sage, and receive direct, simple, comprehensive, and deeply human lessons and teachings. From transcending the experience of separation, releasing old conditioned patterns and wounds, and alleviating suffering, to demystifying esoteric practices and revealing one's true purpose and innate freedom. Welcome to the flow of enlightenment. Transformation is all there is.
Oh, wonderful. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the flow of enlightenment. Hello, GP.
Hello, Lisa. I guess you had a mic problem. I was wondering if you're going to be here, if I was going to hear you.
There we go. And I'm going to just give a heads up that my connection's a little bit wonky, but I'm going to have faith and trust that it's going to improve here. See, transformation is all there is. There we go. Oh, well, GP, today has this topic, which is the naked truth, being comfortable in our own skin, has really got the buzz going on. That's what's happening.
Interesting.
Not a shocker.
Yeah, not a shocker, really.
The one thing that we're all born with, a body and skin, and probably the one of the most, it seems, uncomfortable thing to just be accepting of, loving of, appreciative of. And now, mind you, a lot of people stepped up and said that they are, and we're going to discuss that too, because I loved it. But there is this uncomfortability, and it's not even just shame or, you know. So my biggest first question to kick this off is, when we're babies, babies don't care if they're, they don't say, usually they're kicking their socks off, get them off me. So
yes, right.
Why does this happen? Or is that a good question? Is it why? Why does it switch?
Oh, well, it's purely cultural. Yeah, I mean, if you look at children, there's no sense, self-consciousness whatsoever. you know, for the longest time, there wasn't in human beings either. Clothing wasn't to cover stuff up or to make improvements. It was just to keep warm.
or sun protection or something. Yeah.
It was really just because we, for whatever reason, we're not hairy anymore. And so we kind of had to make up for that in some way. Mostly, I think, as we moved, it was probably not necessary in the beginning out in the, you know, African Serengeti, you know, where in the winter the temperature was 80, right? You know, having a lot of fur didn't really matter, although it is interesting that we're the only ones that don't have that, us and pigs.
Yeah.
that's about it. It's a strange little twist of evolutionary.
Pigs actually use mud for selection. Their skin.
Yeah, they find a way external to themselves to do stuff for their skin. I guess the others would be like the water mammals, like whales and dolphins and that sort of thing. But I'm really digressing here.
It's the nature show now.
It's the nature show, yeah. It somewhere along the line, the idea began, the culture became increasingly powerful, a powerful force. Really, it started with agriculture, and before what was tribal, which were relatively small, right? Groups of people. Everybody was basically interacting with nature the way, because it was the environment in which we were in that was determining the characteristics of our life. Wasn't until agriculture that we actually started having an impact on the environment, that we could actually start bending the environment to our needs. When that happened, cities started forming, more complex culture, specialization of work, and that sort of thing. But along that those lines, the primitive need for a group, which is inherent in all human beings, and all mammals, actually, our need to be part of a group, part of a pack, part of a tribe, is part, I mean, it was, we're some, one of those critters that we do better as a group than we do by ourselves. So our entire inner mechanism is such that we do not want to be alone. We want to be part of a group. We want to have family and community and that sort of thing. It's a human need. Over time, culture became more and more intertwined with that. And so what the rules that suited a culture, even if they were contrary to our nature and the environment, they started to become dominant. Mm. And one of the key ways in which a culture controls people is by controlling their bodies. If I control the food, if I control a sense of shame about your body, if I determine what is appropriate and what isn't in terms of behavior and feeling and appearance and all of that sort of stuff, I have absolute power over you. Yes. And that's what happened, especially in the West. You know, the Adam and Eve story in the West, which is the weirdest, most distorted view of the world you could possibly get, where nature itself was fallen. Yeah. Through the sin of Adam and Eve, the whole earth is condemned, right? The whole earth has now sinned, right? Yeah. And so your nature is no longer pure. It's no longer innocent. It's no longer childlike. And so all of a sudden now, you can't trust your thoughts, you can't trust your feelings, you can't trust your body, you can't trust your natural instincts. You become completely alienated from yourself. I mean, it's the most horrific thing that has ever appeared. And then it actually dominated the West. Mm-hmm. You know, an obscure religion of a warrior tribe in the Bronze Age becomes the dominant world view of the most powerful nations in the world. It's kind of absurd to think about, but that's what we're dealing with now. And so, first off, you are taught to be ashamed of your human nature. It is a disconnect of the soul that's institutionalized within all the institutions of the West, many in the East, and both culturally and religiously. And then how you're supposed to behave and how you're supposed to look is now completely dictated by the culture. What's beautiful is dictated by the culture. It's not what feels right to you, not what feels nature to you. Individuality has become the enemy. That's kind of it in a nutshell. Not a very optimistic view. I agree, but if we know what's happening, we can begin to reclaim our power over it. Back the power of your individual capacity for self-expression.
You know, that was, you covered a lot of centuries there, but hold on.
Basically about 12,000 years.
In a nutshell. But really what I pulled from that is, you said the word get our power back, and it's so interesting. I would have, just from my culture and where I am, I would have started with the word value. Like, we're placing different value on different body types, different hairiness, different height, short, this, you know, all these things.
Yes.
Birthmark, red hair, freckles. And then, but you said power. And I think that's a big distinction right now. So a lot of comments came in from the comfy ones, right? A lot of comfy people say, oh no, yeah, that's right there. That's myself and my husband, or my husband and my wife, and, you know, or backwards. You know, us as a couple are comfortable when we do this. Or some, you know, have shared that, no, my parents and culture were not like that. But then when I, you know, met the right person, they taught me self-love and self-acceptance. And can you help us all see that fine line, or very different line actually, between that's not like they saw the value in each other. They just let them have their power back, or so to speak, or what happened there to get so comfy?
Well, a miracle is taking place that's really really started going back about 50 years or so with the advent of the pill, where women actually got control over their sexuality, which men did not like. That was the end. That was the death toll to the cultural control, because you know, women's bodies being the ones that made babies, you know, controlling women was the essence of controlling nature. And in, I think it was 1963, the pill came up. Everything changed. All of a sudden, women had authority over their own bodies. An argument which is still going on, by the way.
I was just going to say that. That's yes. Yes, I hear the other way up quite often.
Yeah. And so, oddly enough, it's begun to change. Prior to that, we were all just creations of our culture. Really up into the 1950s. The 1960s was a huge transformation in that all sorts of the cultural institutions started being questioned. You know, religion started to decline, right?
Yeah.
To now where I think it's, I don't know, it's more than half of the people just say they do not belong to any kind of church,
yes.
Which was the dominant force. And so what's happening is that we're still very clumsy at it, right? Because we haven't really been making these decisions for ourselves forever.
Right.
And now all of a sudden we find ourselves in the position where we can actually approach our own self-expression, our own individual worth as an individual. We can transcend the cultural ideals, which only serve the interest of the culture, not the individual,
right.
And begin to explore these things for ourselves. We're clumsy at it, you know. Sometimes it'll kind of fall over into hedonism, which doesn't really work either. It's more rebellious than it is.
Yes, you know, it's really like letting loose in a Cook candy store.
Yeah, you can do it. But, you know, after a while, you're not going to feel too good. So, you know, coming to this place where we actually can find the balance, and what does that mean? We're getting back in touch with our own nature.
Yeah.
You know, we're getting back in touch with the actual nature of our bodies, the nervous system, what's referred to as the Tao, right? The way things actually are, our own natural impulses, as opposed to the artificial ones that we've been burdened with, being comfortable with our own bodies, and enjoying them while they're here, right?
Yes.
and recognizing that your experience of a body is completely from the inside. I don't look at me. I don't see me.
There's a lot of mirror work, though, and that, yes, actually, that I just want to, I'll share this with people. We are going to be hitting on all of these topics throughout this hour, whether it's about, you know, what we see when we look in the mirror, what we think other people see, what we're worried about, what other people will see, and things that we've been programmed, and also, too, and GP, I'm so... And I'm almost nervous to ask this, but I do want to bring this into the conversation, is the whole gender thing, because, you know, as I watch people, the young people that I know, I can see them, you know, looking at me like, hey, there's whether I'm an Aunt Lisa or a Sister Lisa, like they're saying, okay, you know, she's a woman and my body's going to be changing because they're not there yet or it's going to. And you can see them questioning mm-hmm. and wondering, like, what am I going to look like? Am I okay? Am I dressed okay? Or why are we different? Are they, you know? And are they judging? Is that natural to do that? Like, how do we even know?
Oh, it's perfectly natural for children, of course. They're going to be modeling their parents. They're going to learn to love them, their bodies, love themselves, appreciate their uniqueness, or not, depending on how well their parents do. You know, this is the nature of humans, and it takes us a long time, right? You know, a horse is walking around, you know, is born, but you know, in the morning, in the afternoon, it's walking around, running, right?
Right.
You know, I mean, it's like a year before we can even stand up for a moment.
Right.
I mean, just an enormous amount of development that has to take place in human beings, most of which is learned from the parents. There's not a lot that is actually instinctual. And you see this especially in adolescents and in teenagers.
Yes.
Because they're trying to find some way, someone to be that's going to be successful in the world, mm-hmm. you know, and successful yeah. in the most simple way, you know, find a mate, make a living, you know, have some fun, yeah. have friends, you know, very basic stuff. But in order to do that, we have to become somebody. And, you know, that's kind of the spiritual challenge, is that, okay, we do that. It will be based on our parents and experiences and that sort of, and peers and that sort of thing. And then eventually we discover that that's not who I really am. And we, hopefully over time, that the layers of what have been put on culturally and by your family and the outlook and that sort of stuff will be peeled away, and you get more and more to the heart of who you and your individuality actually are, which doesn't make you a misfit, right? You actually fit in better. And you can, and more understanding of all the people around you, but there's an internal freedom and self-acceptance that is not present as long as you're still in the stage of trying to live up to some kind of standard that was never yours in the first place.
A stage, and I'd love to leave it there for the commercial, but that's certainly, I would like to replace the word for almost today as, like, instead of culture, it's the stage. We're being seen and not seen, and will we get an applause? Will we get booed off the stage?
exactly so, yeah.
So we'll continue this, the naked truth, when we get back here on the Flow of Enlightenment.
The Real Conscious Connection, Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times. Co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
Touch, move, and inspire. Sharing your story of how you overcame your deepest struggle will serve as someone else's survival guide. You are ready to get the book out of your head and onto the page. I'm Jocelyn Bellows, host of Breakdown to Wake Up, a live stream show dedicated to sharing personal journeys of men and women who have traversed through mazes of uncertainty, dark clouds, and dishonoring themselves, and the lessons they have learned along this path of what one can accomplish in our own self-discovery. And as a writing and life coach, I work with men and women to break through the BS of their lives to find their own voice and leaping into a life they love. It is my belief that when we share our stories of how we overcame what we have been through, it will serve as someone else's survival guide. So if you're ready to get the book out of your head and onto the page, I'd love to hear from you. Go to www.jocelynbellows.com and join me every Tuesday at noon Eastern and Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern.
If I could be you.
And you could be me. For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way.
To get inside.
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Well, how fitting that commercial was about shoes, as we're talking about not wearing clothes. Well, and the truth is, GP, we're not just simply talking about not wearing clothes, you know, naked. It really is this comfortability in our within our bodies, and it goes deeper, and that's where this self-inquiry is coming about. Something that came up is my mother used to always have this big one, and she would always, you know, tell my father, who would never be shirtless or whatever, he'd always wear a little undershirt or something, but she said, "You're not coming to the table like that, you know, mister, you know, you put a proper shirt on," right? And maybe, you know, she might just say, you know, "We don't want your chest hairs falling in the food and stuff." So there's like a hygiene or an etiquette thing, but is that, I'm thinking back to the caveman days. I mean, well, they'd probably get singed if they were too close to the fire, but what about that is hygiene even maybe a little bit of control that forced upon us, or, you know, women have to shave this and men have to do that or wear this? Where does that come in?
Oh, yeah, it's all cultural. Okay. None of it's needed. None of it's necessary. Our bodies are quite capable of, you know, we survived. Jesus, we survived a long time without soap.
Right. Survive Without Soap, another title.
Yeah, we did quite well without that. I mean, it's, yeah, you know, in the Victorian period, you dressed for breakfast, you know?
Yes.
You know, the men had their waistcoats and stuff on. You never went anywhere unless you were absolutely properly attired.
Yes. Right? Yes. Apologies were made if they weren't.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Letters would be written.
And how did it get so far? That is like so far.
Well, that's the cultural reach. And, you know, that wasn't everybody, right?
Right.
But that, you know, that, you know, the Victorians were, that was a middle class phenomenon, or a merchant class phenomena, right?
Okay.
It wasn't a middle class and upper class. There was the upper class, which, of course, were the, you know, the royalty, aristocrats, and that sort of thing. And then there was this merchant class, that, you know, people owned the businesses, they held the money. And then there was the working class, right? And the working class did not, you know, 12 kids in one room, right? Yeah. They did not dress for breakfast, right?
Right.
So it became culture, but, you know, those cultures, you know, like that was held up to be the ideal. That's what everybody should be shooting for, right? And so it's kind of, you know, you could be part of that group. You could have been one of the, you know, wealthy merchants and, you know, walked around in overalls, right? But you wouldn't do that. You always displayed your particular class. You lived your particular culture. Within, you know, the overall culture, there were different levels of that culture. If you were some kind of an aristocrat, you looked like an aristocrat, so everybody knew you were an aristocrat. So the clothes are identity. Their clothes are the part of the social order. You know, look at a politician or a lawyer or something like that. It's, you know, it's a white shirt, it's a dark suit, and then, you know, maybe there's an interesting tie, but not even usually that. I mean, it's you can spot them a mile away, right? It's the uniform of my particular place within the culture.
So
I know,
right?
I know one guy who's kind of a leader in the personal development, that sort of stuff. He's actually quite a big name. He has 4 suits he wears all the time.
Right.
I mean, his girlfriend, it just took her forever to get him to just wear a pair of jeans to the beach. He wore his goddamn suit to the beach.
No. Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Is he?
I mean, it's twisted, but he would never, he will never let down his vibe, his appearance, his public persona, you know, he became it, right? Well, that's what happens, you know. It happens to stars all the time.
Yeah.
They become their own hype. They get lost in it.
The
and they don't even know
in.
Who they are anymore. No celebrity knows who they are, actually.
So this is okay. So this is hugely important. So the, in that story of the people who are living that life, the clothes are making the man. And when we give the power, which is what you said earlier, when we give our power up to this costume, for, if you will, then we devalue ourselves through that
totally.
Disconnection.
You define yourself in terms of the cultural model that you have become, and you're lost. You're nowhere near, you have nothing to do with it. You're not in the picture.
Right.
If you have any kind of feeling or thought or interest or desire that is outside of that particular identity you have to fulfill, you suppress it, period. I mean, the Victorian era, it was just rampant with, sexual abuse of children and the treatment of women in general, because it was so oppressed. So much was suppressed because there's nothing natural about that culture. It's completely contrary to human nature, right? Which is why they could look at Africans as less than human.
Yes.
Because they were completely in their nature, right? They're
yes.
completely at home in their bodies, and thank God for that, right?
Yes.
I mean, if it wasn't for the blacks, we'd all be wearing those stupid wigs and dancing minuets.
Oh gosh, thank gosh! I'm putting that stinky powder that with lead.
Oh my God!
Really good in
my God! They they saved us. They brought us back to living.
Yes. Now, with that being said, that's a hugely important thing, what you just said about, the sexual abuse and such, because right now in this culture, for pretty much the around the world, not everywhere, but, this is a big thing. Our bodies are being valued if they're sexy or not, if they are attractive. Let's use that word, actually. Whether they're attractive or not. And if you are attractive, you're accepted. If you're not attractive or have something that somebody would be attracted to, then you are no longer accepted. And then we can go change our bodies. We can, like, permanently or just for the day. And mm-hmm. what are people to do, with men and women, when they don't want to do those changes? They know it's not right. They are comfortable with themselves, but maybe their mate isn't. Maybe they're not attracting who they want because of this. Is it in our own heads or?
Oh my God, totally. Right. You're not attracting who you want. You mean you're trying to attract somebody who's not actually interested in you, but what you appear to be?
Right.
I mean, you want to date the puppet I'm holding and not me?
Right.
I mean, it's absurd and highly, highly dangerous. I think in 2019, there were 18 million cosmetic surgery operations, voluntary cosmetic surgery operations. People going to extremes to manipulate their body, to conform to a cultural ideal. I mean, the need to find somebody obviously is a deeply human need, that need to connect and the intimacy and everything that goes with it, deeply human need. And so we will put ourselves through all sorts of distortions in order to get that need met, because it is so natural to us. But it doesn't actually even meet the need. Because if you have to become somebody else to attract somebody, they're attracted to somebody else, not you. And so, at some point, you're going to betray yourself. The real you is going to come out in some way. And all of a sudden, 2 years into a relationship, and go, who is this person? I have no idea who they are. Right?
Right.
and it's because we have become somebody we are not. And there's no intimacy. There can be no genuine intimacy if you're not there.
Because of the lack of comfort? Is that what you're...
Yeah. If I have to become something else, then you're not seeing me. It's not me you love. It's this other person you imagine me to be. So how can it be satisfying? It can't.
Right. It's interesting you said the word conform, which I thought was conform. You're conning somebody with a form that you're...
that's good. I like that.
and in that case, then, it's so interesting, because there can be fun, many people like to dress up, you know, for, you know, look good, you know, and that thing, and they do their thing, but that we're not talking about that. We're talking about literally disowning and being so uncomfortable with yourself that you no longer feel safe. And that word intimacy is so important, because it doesn't always have to be sexual. It can just be a connection with another. Sitting, I used to
It isn't primarily sexual. It's emotional connection. It's being seen and known.
The
physical intimacy is just a part of that.
I'm writing that down. I like that, because that's the important part, is being seen and known. And the picture that we have up on, you know, Facebook there that we shared, that really, I mean, I felt seen and known just by looking at, you know, these two people that were two lovely individuals, you know, super naked, but you don't even know they're naked because they wore their skin so well. They were so comfortable in their skin that you weren't like, hey, they're naked. You kind of looked at them and thought, gosh, they are exuding confidence and power and comfort and joy, enjoyment of life. And when we get so far away from that and we're not able to enjoy life, you're right, we're going to attract somebody who they're not enjoying life. You're both enjoying a puppet at that time.
Exactly. Yeah. It's one robot, you know, if you're, you know, mating with another robot. There's nothing of substance there. And just the emotional damage it does to people, and the psychological distortions that bring about, you know, somebody with an eating disorder like anorexia, yes. They look in the mirror and they see a fat person.
Yes.
It's that kind of a distortion. They do not see how absolutely emaciated they've become. Their attention immediately goes to some body part that looks distorted to them. So it literally distorts your view of everything. Now, somebody with anorexia is an extreme case, but we all have that to a certain extent. Right. Somebody gets out of the shower and they look at themselves in the mirror. What do you look at?
Right.
You're drawn to, oh, look at that flaw. Oh, I wish I didn't have that. Oh, my butt's too big. Or, you know, my knees are, bony or something. There's always something. Right, there's always something we can find, because they haven't invented Photoshop for the human body yet, only pictures.
Right. Yes.
And I actually did a contract. One of my clients many years ago was Victoria's Secret, and I saw the before and after images of the models. And guess what? They're real human beings. They have flaws. They got little bulges here. They got marks here. You see it before, and then you see it photoshopped.
Right.
Right? When it's over. And it's like, no human being really looks like that. But this is the nature of the... Because now our culture and economy are one. Profit over everything. To convince people they don't look good... get you buying the stuff that promises you the sex appeal and the attractiveness and all of that, but constantly giving you an ideal that you could never, ever live up to. Nobody can.
So do you truly think that they truly market to us to make us feel not enough?
Absolutely.
So that we can buy their create a problem, offer a solution. No, I'm doing it backwards. I can't remember.
Yeah, I mean, you have to create a problem. If women loved themselves, the cosmetic industry would fall apart tomorrow.
Right.
It completely depends on continuing to make people think that this is going to make you better, more attractive, more desirable, and that you're not now. Mm-hmm. You're never going to hear the cosmetic industry telling you how beautiful you are now. You don't need any of this. You're going to hear them say that?
They'd be in a business. Now, so what about those? Okay, so we had some lovely comments made and to say, you know what? You know, they've asked their husbands what they think. They've asked their friends what they think. And they themselves are like, you know, they're all comfortable, but I'm not. But I would like to be. And I think there's a glimmer there. Where can we all start to be on that path where we can be a little bit more comfortable?
Well, I think what has to happen is that, first off, you have to stop listening to the commercial messages and the endless barrage of nonsense that that we get inundated with every day. Secondly, is we have to get some point of reference now. The point of reference everybody uses is this artificial sense of beauty. It's an artificial sense of success and wealth and all of these things. You know, that all the bullshit things that our culture comes up with to make us pursue certain things that we don't really need. We need to get a reference point that's actually real, which is our own human nature, the actual environment as it is, what your body really needs. What does a healthy body look like? What does it feel like? Oh. Right? And at that point, it becomes an internal thing. You know, how does your body feel, right? Yes. Can you accept the way it feels? And we all, it's true, we are obese. The U.S. certainly is. Most people are overweight. Children are overweight. Mm-hmm. Because it's a toxic environment where we're overfed and undernourished. And so the body isn't getting what it needs, and so it's responding in kind, right? So, I mean, the simple advice for, you know, people who want to lose weight is, well, eat healthy and exercise. Duh. It's really simple, right? Yes. So, but everybody has to find for themselves, what is that ideal weight? Well, it's not going to be the same at 25 as it is at 65, right? Yeah. It's just not going to be, right? Things are going to look different. So defining health, defining beauty, as an internal thing, as a characteristic that is felt more than seen, it'll actually end up reflecting itself in the body and in the vibe around you and the whole energy that you exude, which is much greater than just the body. But the important thing is to find a point of reference that actually makes sense, that is driven by what is natural for us, what's natural for human beings, what's natural for our body, what kind of environment we should be in, rather than the artificial one being created, basically just to get our money.
You know what, GP? I'm gonna ask this question, but I'm not gonna let you answer it till we come back after commercial break.
Okay.
And that is, if somebody listening right now, what are the people to do if they know that they are in a culture, they are in an environment which they're not going to be accepted. They're never going to feel beautiful, valuable, powerful. So, but they know that they've been around in other small tribes and communities where they do different kind of people, different beliefs. My question to you is, do we just get up and go to the other tribe or community, or do we just figure out how to find the balance within ourselves and stay amongst those who are not accepting us? But do not answer that until we get back from this commercial break.
Conscious Media for Conscious Minds. Om Times.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free. AscendingHearts.com.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going Om? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
COVID-19, brought to you by CDC and the Ad Council.
If you're feeling increasingly lonely right now, you're not alone. It's totally normal. Even though we may not be able to get together in person, connecting virtually with friends and family still gives you a chance to interact with people and may help raise your spirits. Join a virtual book club, set up group text chats, or online video coffee breaks with coworkers.
Find more self-care and coping tips at coping-19.org.
Welcome back, guys. You are listening to The Flow of Enlightenment with GP Walsh. And a quick invitation, I want to jump right back into this conversation, but head on over to the website. We've got to get you over there because not only is there, you know, sign up for the light letter so you know what's going on, what's happening, but there are so many just free stuff. As you know, GP, you have so many things that are just beautiful meditation, self-inquiry meditations, helping you along this journey of remembering who you are, getting to know who you are, who am I? And this conversation right now, and even with that question, I think I get a lot from the people I work with, and they say, you know what, okay, great, I'll do the work, I'll work on myself, I'll do the self-inquiry work and find out who I am. And then I realize that the people around me don't know who they are and I don't really like them. So being comfortable in our own skin and talking about whether it's for skin, body, nakedness or ourselves, what if we do the work and then our culture, our environment is not safe? Do we up and leave?
Well, I can guarantee you if you do the work on yourself, you will find yourself out at odds with the particular group that you're within. Right. That's not even an if, that is just a when. Because it's inevitable. You know, we outgrow things. And as long as we're growing in the direction that is the most conducive to our ultimate freedom, then we have to embrace it even when it costs, and it will cost. Like many things do in life, any kind of advancement you make in life. You know, if you get a promotion at work, your relationship with the people you used to work with has changed completely.
That is so true.
There's no way around it. Or if you're transferred to another part of the country or another part of the world, you know, your whole family is now just going to experience a complete and total shift in everything. It's inevitable. It comes with progress. So on one hand, you know, you grieve what is lost, but you welcome what is coming. And as long as you know, the feeling is there that you're getting closer and closer to yourself as you really are, less and less cultural overhead, less and less inauthenticity, you go, it's worth it. It's worth the price of admission. You know, there's just no way you can grow without outgrowing some. Some will come with you. Some will be on pace with you. You know, it's very possible even to have a romantic relationship where both are growing at a similar rate and in a similar direction, that they can rediscover each other over and over and over again. That's not frequent, but it can happen. You know, some people will continue to be there your whole lives because they're on the same path. But it is absolutely essential for us as human beings to be connected to those that are on the same path, that do have the same kind of outlook, that can be supportive and really honoring your growth. And you know, that's the sign when you find people who aren't trying to force you back into a particular mold, but are actually encouraging you to grow those wings. Well, you know, how can you not want but to hang with them?
yes. You know, it's interesting we talked about, you know, the first and most important thing is to find out what does a healthy body look like, and then what does a healthy body feel like? And now, sometimes, as you mentioned, you know, we have a lot of obesity here. We have a lot of toxicity, is what I want to say, over obesity even. Mm-hmm.
And I know even some of my girlfriends, you know, I'll say, oh, I'll come over for a visit. And many of them will say, okay, well, I'm not putting my makeup on. You just got to take me as is. And I'm like, I always do. And then, of course, I might notice something. Yeah, it looks different. But I still absolutely love. And you know what? Even by the time a minute goes by, I don't even see what I saw in the first place anyways. Because now, you know, I don't even see it. But with that, is that also turning, funny I'm saying this, turning a blind eye to toxicity and care and concern for, you know, your friend or your spouse, that they are perhaps, their bodies are unhealthy, are toxic, and that
yes,
to support them. So how do we cross that little fine line there?
Well, that's a tough one, isn't it? You know, first off, we have to do it for ourselves. And then recognize that we ourselves were ignorant of these things at one time. You know, there's nothing worse than somebody who just has to tell you they're a vegan. It's like, right. Please do not become an annoying anything, right?
Yes.
You know, it's worse, actually. It's worse. I wish you were, you know, chomping down a steak rather than, you know, reminding everybody, oh, you know, meat is really, don't, shouldn't eat meat. You know, if it becomes yet another cultural identity. Yes. Now you're associated with a different group, and you're becoming that group. You still aren't an individual, right? The individual chooses what's best for them in the right combination, in the right order, you know, what's best for their body, right? You know, there are people who can't, their body cannot actually survive on a purely vegetarian diet.
Right.
They have to have some degree, some amount. Now, vegans will yell at me about this. They'll say it's not true, mm-hmm. but I, you know, the evidence seems pretty clear that there are some people, they simply need to have some kind of animal protein in some form.
Yes.
Now, they do their best to do it as humanely and just the right amount.
Right.
Now, even things like eating meat, which we don't really need to do anymore, except in rare cases like that. But even if we reduced it to the level that our bodies actually evolved, which is maybe 15% of the diet, and less so for females, because it was actually men who ate more meat than females did, because they'd actually hunt the animal, eat most of it there, and then bring some of it back.
Yes.
They didn't carry this big thing back 5 miles, right?
That's right. And then we get to make soups and stews.
Yes, exactly so. But if we even reduced the amount of meat we consumed to 15% of the diet, the entire character of the world would change.
Absolutely. Yes, the body would look. If we all just stopped, reduced our eating, we just overeat. We overdo a lot.
Yes, we're emotional eating. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly so. And on top of that, you know, the food is poisoned, you know. I mean, the way animals and even and plants are grown now, you know, they're trying to patent all the stuff. They're trying to get complete control over the food supply and that sort of thing. And so it's all manipulated. So we are, you know, a person can make the best choices they can possibly make. Mm-hmm. And under the circumstances that they're in. But we do have to realize that we are in an enormously destructive and sick culture, right? That is not our friends. And so, you know, I always buy organic food where I can. I spend more than I normally would, you know, that I didn't have to. When I used to go back and forth to Argentina a lot, I'd notice that in Argentina, I'd eat two meals. And I was completely satisfied. That's all I had to eat all day. I didn't eat anymore. And they weren't big, right? They didn't have organic there because it's all organic. They didn't have the destruction of the topsoil and all the fertilizers and all the stuff that we do here. It was just amazing, the difference, how much the quality of just the simplest food was so much better. So, it behooves on us as individuals to take responsibility for our own toxicity and all the things that we go through. So we do have to become sensitive to our bodies, come to understand what your body needs. Yeah. And, you know, I've gotten good at telling the differences to when I'm emotionally eating, when I'm not, when I'm eating out of boredom, yeah. Right?
Yes.
Or when my body actually needs something.
Yeah.
And, you know, go ahead. Where'd you go?
I think I'm here. Oh, sorry. I was lost a signal there. One of the things I absolutely notice is that if for me, I'm not a big, I don't go to the gym, but I definitely get my movement in and exercise because for health, and I do my lymphatic massage, my rebounding. But here's the thing. If I didn't do that for, let's just say I stopped for, let's say 6 months. And if I didn't like how I looked and if I wasn't comfortable in my own skin, there's a difference though, because then I know that that's my responsibility. I have not done the things that are beneficial for me to feel really good. Now, as soon as I start, even if it's one day in, I now start feeling more attractive or beautiful because I know that I am loving myself. I am treating myself well and am en route. And then when you continue and do that, so there's definitely a thing about self-care, what is what you're talking about too, the choices of food you're eating and movement. And when you know what healthy feels like, I think you are more comfortable in your skin.
Oh, absolutely. If you feel healthy, you kind of exude that. You know, the key is you coming to the conclusion as to what is best for you and your body rather than being culturally imposed on you. Yes. If it's culturally imposed, it's not free. And it's going to be a standard that is completely off because one size does not fit all. Right? The 5'11 supermodel, right,
yeah,
is an actual rare body type. And most of the supermodels say, damn, they wish I could actually just, you know, have some boobs again, right? because it's just an extraordinarily sick setup right from the get-go. And the remedy is for us to take personal responsibility. What is best for this body? Mm. And that requires inquiry. That requires self-work. It requires self-care. It requires seeing through the advertising and marketing tricks, coming to know what feels right in your own body. Go, don't eat sugar for a week, and then have a bit of sugar, and watch the effect it has on your body.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If you're having it all the time, you get used to it. You don't notice it. Mm-hmm. I've done that, like a month and a half. I mean, no sugar, not even fruit, right?
Right.
I took a bite of a lemon. My God, it's sweet.
Oh.
There's sweetness in a lemon. I didn't taste
it
before. Yeah, I could identify it. Same thing with like a grapefruit. I could identify it.
Yes. Because I had
now purged all of that out of the system, and now I was actually more sensitive to what I was taking in. You know, the same thing people who, you know, drink a lot of stimulants, you know, 10 cups of coffee or stimulants, yes, coffee or something during the day, you know, you after a while you don't even notice that it's there, right?
Yeah.
Till it crashes, you know, see the downside of it. So it's get to know your own body. I swear, when it feels good, it will tend to look better to you.
Yes.
It won't have the same kind of effect. And then to free yourself from the cultural norms and to just be actually comfortable with yourself, that is the most attractive thing there is.
Yeah.
Somebody who's totally comfortable in their own skin is incredibly magnetic.
Yes, they are. I'll see if I can squeeze this question in really quickly. I love that you called it cultural overhead. So what we're going to try to do, everybody, is lessen. We're going to lower that cultural overhead on our expense sheet, right? But in doing so, a quick question is, if one of our basic needs is to be accepted by the tribe, if we lower our cultural overhead too much, will we just be alone?
Well, that's the fear, isn't it?
Yes.
But yeah, that's the fear. You may feel alone for a while if you're in a group or a cultural group that will not accept you unless you conform to those things. Mm-hmm. But we'll very naturally, because our nature is, you know, to hook up, you know, to connect, you'll find others. You will. You simply will.
Okay. Beautiful.
I mean, it's our nature. You know, the nervous system will just seek it out because you need it. Mm-hmm. And it will abandon that which is not feeding it. And, you know, the culture you're in is feeding you on a different level. Right, that's also toxic. In a group of people who don't accept you as you are, that is toxic. You need to get out of that.
Oh, that was very helpful, I think, for most of the comments that were coming in. I think that was things. So, you know what? But get out of the toxic environment. If you're not being accepted, if the cultural overhead is just so powerful that you are powerless and you are hating yourself and not feeling good, then once you get out, your nervous system will seek others, you know, that are loving.
And it's not your fault. It's not your fault. When you're feeling bad about yourself like that, it's not your fault. You were taught to feel bad about yourself. You were educated and trained because that makes you controllable and culpable. Right?
Yes.
It's not your fault. But it is now your responsibility to wake up.
I love that. It is not your fault, but it is your responsibility to wake up. And GP can help you. And so I'll do my one last invitation on that. Yeah. Come on over, guys, to gpwalsh.com. You know, just even once you're there, you'll know what to do. If you want to ask a question, you want to reach out, there's, you know, you can message us there or join the groups. GP, spiritual teacher, GP Walsh on Facebook. We'd love to have you over there. And so we have some goodies coming up in program. So tune in next Tuesday, The Flow of Enlightenment. And thank you so much, GP. I hope we're all a little bit more comfortable in our skin.
I hope so, too.
Bye, everyone.